Good afternoon. This is the business meeting of the Judicial Council of California for January 17, 2013. Happy New Year, all. Our first meeting of the new calendar year. This meeting is now in session. As you know, I remind all of us that our meetings are audiocast live with real-time captioning on the California Courts website. Also, 12 council members are attending by phone because of the shorter-than-usual agenda, and this is to minimize disruption in their personal work calendars and to reduce travel costs. Shortly, I'll conduct a member roll call. For the benefit of all those council members joining us by phone and the online audience, please speak into your microphones and address each other by name so that listeners and real-time captioning readers can follow our discussion. I would also ask the council members on the phone to also identify themselves by name when commenting or asking questions. Also, please mute your phones when not speaking, and please don't put us on hold, even though you may be tempted, lest we be subject to on-hold music. Portions of these meetings are also routinely videotaped for later broadcast on the California Courts website. I'll now conduct the roll call for members joining us by phone. I'll do so in alpha order, beginning with voting members and then advisory members. Please indicate present when I call your name. Judge James Brandlin.
Present.
Ms. Angela Davis.
Present.
Judge David D'Alba.
Present.
Presiding Judge Cheryl Ellsworth.
Past Presiding Judge Cheryl Ellsworth. Present.
You're right. Thank you. I'll make that amendment, Judge Cheryl Ellsworth. Ms. Edith Mathai.
Present.
Judge David Rosenberg.
Present.
Mr. Alan Carlson.
Present.
Presiding Judge Lori Earle. Presiding Judge Brian McCabe.
Present.
Ms. Mary Beth Todd.
Present.
Assistant Presiding Judge Charles Walkup.
Present.
Thank you all. Thank you for attending by phone. Before we commence our agenda, obviously with the recent publication of the Governor's 2013-14 proposed budget, we remain focused on judicial branch budget issues as our number one priority. And it is the first item on our discussion agenda, and I'll have more comments for that discussion. Our concerns are not just with this year's proposal, but also with the cumulative effect of previous year's budget acts. In his press conference, Governor Brown spoke eloquently about justice and equality and fairness in the budget process. We share those goals and objectives, and we are very closely connected to those values more than most. But as I have said in my comments in a conference call with reporters, it is January, not June, and we are entering into this budget cycle with open minds and clear objectives around achieving adequate funding for our branch, a fair deal, and the ability to fulfill our constitutional obligations of equal access to justice for all Californians. I was pleased to read recent coverage and editorials about the consequences of ongoing cuts to the judicial branch and the public we serve. I'd like to acknowledge the dedication and determination of all the justices, judges, bar members who have so clearly communicated the effects of our cuts on the judicial branch. In particular, I would like to thank our trial court funding group, the trial court budget working group, and the members of this council who've been working tirelessly to inform the public and our sister branches about the unique issues faced by the judicial branch. We have intelligent, creative, and passionate leaders advocating on our branch's behalf. I am grateful for all of your service. After roll call on our agenda is my Chief Justice's report. It will be brief. And that is reporting on activities since our last meeting, which was December 14th and included the holiday season. I finished last year, as I began this year, meeting with the governor and members of the media. In December, I had my annual press briefing with legal affairs correspondents. In January, I participated in a teleconference with Judge Jarre and the press on our perspectives about the governor's budget proposal, our relief at no additional general fund reductions, but our concern about the existing ongoing cuts and the proposed use of construction funds. Just last night, I attended, along with Justice Baxter and Justice Miller and Judge Jarre and Jody and Judge Hardcastle, and I might be missing Kurt Soderlund, Kurt Child, many of you here, a reception with legislators hosted by Justice System Partners, who have really stepped up to support the branch during these trying fiscal times. That is the Open Courts Coalition, California Defense Council, Consumer Attorneys of California, Sacramento County Bar Association, and I recall also Presiding Judge Earl was present last night as well, and the State Bar of California, a diverse group all unified in supporting the branch. And I was gratified to meet the legislators and to share their optimism and their enthusiasm about going forward in this coming year. I also have special thanks to Joe Dunn and Nancy Drabble for putting the matter together. All of these activities and events and sort of a trend of things have given me reason for some cautious optimism for 2013. That ends my report. I'll ask Judge Jarre to present the Administrative Director's Report.
Thank you, Chief. Council members, good afternoon. The written report of the Administrative Director, as always, is a compendium of the activities that have occurred since the last council meeting. I invite your attention to it at your convenience. A few highlight points I'd like to raise for you. First of all, budget-related, I should tell you, and it will be no surprise to you, that staff has been burning the midnight oil, not only digesting the governor's budget proposal, but developing materials that assist us in creating a transparent and clear advocacy position, not the least of which materials are graphs and charts and so forth that we're bringing into a clear focus. They've worked long days and weekends, this I can attest to, and I'm ever grateful for their sustained commitment and efforts throughout. With respect, and more obviously relative to the budget in due course, with respect to the AOC restructuring process in conformance with the directives of the council, the Executive and Planning Committee provided direction to staff, to us, to defer a formal status report from today's meeting as originally scheduled to February in light of the shortness of the agenda and other considerations associated with that. I would, however, like to make a brief highlight of activities to come. First, CJR is working on finalizing information and recommendations regarding a cost-benefit analysis of its extensive comprehensive education programs for the February meeting. HR is working on two very important activities relating to restructuring objectives and directives, also for presentation at the February meeting. One concerns the telecommute, teleworking, or remote work policy, depending on the label that is applied. You may be aware or recall that originally we were planned to come forward at this meeting to provide a report relative to the telecommute policy and a recommendation for you concerning its contents. I indeed had, with the assistance, considerable assistance, I should say, of staff, developed a proposed amended program that would tighten up considerably certain facets of the process. However, when we sat with Executive and Planning Committee to prepare for the presentation, it became clear that members of the Executive and Planning Committee wanted us to explore additional considerations in terms of recommendations to the Council, and so asked that we delay the presentation so that we could enlarge and expand the topics in our report for February. So February is when you will see the telecommute recommendations coming forward. The second piece that HR has been working on has to do, of course, with the classification and compensation study activities, which are germane to a series of the directives. Many of the other directives are tied to those. HR is developing proposals, alternative proposals, for your considerations as to how that classification and compensation study process should be concluded, and you'll see in February those options for your consideration, following which, of course, we'll be able to move forward with dispatch. The present staffing metrics for the agency have the workforce total, and that includes permanent as well as contract and temporary staff, dropping from 806 in November to a current workforce number of 801.73. We are initiating the first of a two-step approach with respect to temporary and contract staff in light of the observations in the SEC report that observed that there is additional expense associated with retaining on a long-term basis temporary employees and contract staff. We have made a conversion of 32 long-term temp agency staff to regular employee status. This approach is consistent with the goal of ensuring the appropriate use of temporary workers to meet short-term needs. The conversions, of course, have no effect on overall total workforce numbers because those numbers embrace those categories. In a similar but phased effort, a plan is being developed to convert long-term contractors as appropriate to reduce high contractor costs. Once again, these have no immediate impact on and will not have a future impact on the numbers that I laid out for you. So we believe that these steps, as they are ongoing, will address workload needs, reduce dependency on the temporary and contract worker categories, and also maintain institutional knowledge in such critical areas as facilities and IT, the latter of which, as all of you know, has a number of contract staff. The last piece I'm going to ask Kurt Soderlund and Diane Cowdery to address at more length with the balance of my time. I'm very pleased to share with you information on this subject. It's a new initiative undertaken within the administrative office. During his term as interim chief deputy director, Kurt Soderlund assessed agency resources for the administrative office and particularly associated with the subject of management training. We're fortunate that Kurt, with more than two decades of experience in management within the executive branch, has the perspective to bring to bear with regard to where we stand as an agency, and he identified an area that needed serious attention. Just as trial court management training has been addressed, we need to address training with regard to AOC management staff itself. He initiated a project in collaboration with Ken Couch of Human Resources, Diane Cowdery of CEJR, and Chief Counsel Mary Roberts to develop a training program. A group was assembled for that purpose. There was a synergistic effect using the Core 40 program for court management, and as a consequence, a series of mandatory management training courses designed to support AOC assistant directors, managers, and supervisors in their day-to-day responsibilities and improve operations throughout the agency as a consequence are kicking off this month. There are six programs, and they will be presented throughout the course of a year. This will, we submit, better equip our leadership teams with knowledge and skills needed in this challenging effort. This was not a directive, but it was an outgrowth of the self-assessment and self-examination that was a product of the chief's initiative that began with the formation of the SEC. So with that, I'll turn things over to Kurt and Diane and thank them in advance for their great work, along with Mary's and, of course, Ken's.
Sure. I'll just say a couple things to add to
what Judge Jarre said. We have been doing a program called Core 40 for many years. It's a management training program for court leaders.
Chief, I'm sorry, I can't hear. I don't know if anyone else can hear the speaker.
Thank you. Thank you for letting us know. Thank you. My elbow was on that button. Sorry. So what I was saying is we've adopted a program that we've been holding for many years for court leadership called the Core 40 program. And, this is one of the nice things about CEJR is we do a lot of training with different groups, and so we can repurpose things. And so we've adapted this curriculum to really be relevant for AOC management. In addition to the six classes that we're holding, and we're holding them here and in Sacramento and then by video conference to Burbank or the Southern region, we're going to be developing a couple of online classes so that they would be available 24/7 to our management staff. One is going to be on employment law, and one will be a basic orientation to management. We've been holding management training programs sporadically over the last few years. The primary one is an orientation for new managers and supervisors, and because we really haven't had any, that's been postponed. So this is a really great effort that we're re-energizing the management training, and I'm very excited that we can use the Core 40 curriculum to do that.
Thank you, Diane. Most people want me to put my elbow on the mute button. That being said, the training is going to focus, pardon me, largely on performance review and evaluations and changes in the law, in the administration and management of personnel. It's a completely in-house program, using, you know, some of our very seasoned and experienced directors, assistant directors, managers, and supervisors. And we're very encouraged by this. We're going to encourage all supervisors and managers and above to attend these trainings. Again, it's an ongoing program, and I would just reiterate Judge Jarre's comments that we think this is very, very consistent with the themes and the direction and structure of the JC-SEC recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Jarre, anything else?
No, that concludes my report, Chief.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? I also want to next call on Justice Miller for a brief update, but I also realize I forgot to mention people. Also present last night and very helpful in putting this together were Corey and Teresa, and also another special thanks to Michael Belote for helping us facilitate that reception. I ask Justice Miller then to address the council.
Thank you, Chief. I don't have an internal report, but we do have two Judicial Council members who have made initial contacts with their liaison courts, and we would like to have, if they're welcome, to provide those reports to us. First, we'll hear from Judge Terry Jackson and then Judge Alan Hardcastle.
Thank you. On January 11th, I had the opportunity to visit both Santa Cruz and San Benito courts. I met with all of the judges. San Benito has two judges, so that was pretty easy. And then in Santa Cruz, I met with 10 of the 11 judges there. And I'm just going to share with you some of the common interests of both courts, and not necessarily in terms of priority, but just first, they were concerned about the maintenance of the courts and what the budget impact will have on trial court facilities and maintaining their courts. San Bernardino, as many of you are aware of, they're currently in a county building, and they're going to be going into a new building, and the question is, who's going to maintain it? And for San Benito, the day-to-day operations such as water, trash, and so forth, is that a county function, is it a court function, or an AOC function? So they, the court exec was concerned about that. Santa Cruz, on the other hand, has existing buildings that it's just challenging to maintain, and therefore it is a priority for them that the AOC keeps its funding to maintain those buildings. Another common concern among both courts, the methodology that's going to be used in trial court allocations. One, they want to know when it's going to be implemented. Two, how will it be implemented? And before it is rolled out in terms of the reallocations of the courts, whether or not the courts will have input. It's very important that before it's actually implemented, that courts have a say. For instance, San Benito said that they're a court that functions with two. They have a visiting judge, and that visiting judge handles all of their long matters. The other two judges, they can only handle trials that are consist of a day and day and a half. They call themselves a solid Ford car in that they do the basic needs and for their community and ensuring that there's access to justice, but they don't have the ability to do things such as veteran court or behavioral courts or drug courts. And so their concern is that if those courts who do that, would they suffer in the methodology? And that's why they felt it was imperative that before anything is implemented, that all courts have a say. Santa Cruz also echoed that. Also consistent among the two courts that I visited, they like to meet the our new ADOC. Many do know him, but they would like to have an opportunity to talk to him about the AOC restructuring. And what the proposal was is that Santa Cruz, San Benito, and I should talk to David, they want to include Santa Clara. How did you get down there with that group? But anyway, I thought you were up with us. in Monterey, those four courts would have a meeting sometime in March or April. And they would do it in Watsonville, and they'd have an opportunity to meet Steve, and they want me to come back. I didn't do anything to embarrass you, so I guess I was invited back. And Justice Miller and various other representatives just to talk about the reorganization and to get to know Everyone.
So just so you know, Steve, I volunteered us. So we're going sometime in March.
By the way, when I would go to the liaison to the meetings and they had an issue, I gave up everybody's names and phone numbers. So you will be getting phone calls. They're also both Santa Cruz and San Benito are interested in e-filing. So Judge Herman, you're going to be hearing from them. And
send me an email.
And CJR was a big issue for them. They enjoy CJR and they understand the budgets, but they really want that input, the one-on-one input, that not only that getting it off the computer in Saranus is good, but they like to have the programs, if and when our budget gets together, that we could have more CJR training. And there was a concern by one of the judges, apparently at the new Judicial College, two programs were eliminated, and I said, well, I'll talk to the liaisons about that, family law and delinquency, and they thought that was necessary, particularly many newer judges go to and sit in those assignments. They would also like for both courts who are concerned or interested in the Judicial Council looking at jury trial reform in the criminal law area. Peremptory challenges for misdemeanor cases, the composition of jury trials for misdemeanors, because they believe that would be a significant cost savings for our court. They both courts were familiar with, apparently there's a proposal being circulated by the Sonoma presiding judge dealing with the composition. They were well aware of that, and they would like for the council to look at that issue. Santa Cruz mentioned case management, and I told him again, Judge Herman's handling that, and I told him about the strategic plan, and they were hoping that in the strategic plan or consideration could be done some of the common vendors, as well as not only common vendors, but sometimes someplace where the particular vendors can be linked to other courts, and they would hope that that would be included. Last but not least, one of the judges, and what, by the way, when I go to these meetings, I say I'm not a filter. Whatever you want me to raise at the council meeting, I will raise. So that's for open discussion, and I think all issues should be raised. And one of the judges raised judges' salaries and that there has not been a cost of living, and they wanted to know if the council was going to do anything about it. So that's my report, but we will, and I told them that I would be calling on a monthly basis, but also attend with Judge Jarre and Justice Justice Miller the meeting in April or March, or March or April.
Thank you, Terry. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Judge Herman, did you have your hand up?
So just a follow-up. Judge Jarre didn't mention it in his report, but he visited my county to be the keynote speaker at the dedication of our North County clerk's office. And I just want to adding to what Judge Jackson is saying, I mean, my court officers and staff were just tremendously grateful for his participation in our big day. And he really, really went out of his way. He had to drive all the way down from Sacramento because plane service between Santa Barbara and Sacramento, you can't really get there from here. And then he had to drive all the way after the ceremonies all the way back up to Reading. So he really did go out of his way to take a tremendous amount of time. His keynote speech was just inspirational. He met our North County judicial officers and staff for breakfast. They uniformly were extremely pleased that they could connect a face with a name. So I just wanted to express to Judge Jarre my appreciation on behalf of our humble fishing village on the central coast of California for his very effective outreach. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Herman. It was a treat to meet with your judges and also by video means the judges in the Santa Barbara courthouse, and I got a construction hard hat out of the deal.
Judge Barcastle.
Thank you, Justice Miller. I had the pleasure of going up to Lake County on December 20th, and Lake County was a county where I had practiced at times. So I enjoyed going up there and seeing Judge Herrick, who was about to retire, and he presided over my last jury trial that I did prior to my appointment in the bench. And for you city folks, it was a cow in the roadway case.
Were you representing
the cow?
Actually, I was the cow's owner, and it turned out rather well. So that was about 1996.
Was
so
it
I was
open range. Or not?
What's that?
Was it open range?
No, it wasn't open range.
And for us, we don't even know what a cow is. So.
Right. They come before the cart. So I enjoyed going up there, and they have four judges. They're about to have a brand new judge now. 4.6 judicial officers. They have a retired commissioner from Mendocino who comes over the hill and hears cases 3 days a week. Their issues are the same that we have statewide, but it's profound when you go to a smaller county and see the dramatic effects. They're only down 11 employees, and so that doesn't sound like much until you realize that's more than 35% of their workforce. Their staff morale, unfortunately, is extremely low. They haven't had a raise in 6 years. They have had 16 furlough days over the last couple of years, 16 days a year. And what is really sad, I just think is really unacceptable, is they have folks that are, quote, full-time employees who are on food stamps. And that is a sad thing to hear. Many of them got tearful in the two-hour meeting that they had with me. They're very upset that they feel they cannot achieve what they believe to be access to justice. Their professional pride is hurt, because they don't have the staff to personally man the phones. They said people get on the phone after a half hour wait and start yelling about what can we do. And I said, well, you know, I would write down the name of the legislators who represent this district, and I'd provide those to the public and let them know. They have one window for all filing. The line gets rather long there. Because of cuts, of course, self-help centers are being cut. And unfortunately, the self-help center that they had in Lakeport, which is where the main courthouse is, lost their lease, and now they're moving over to the city of Clear Lake, which is about a half-hour drive. So people will have to go to the court, then back to Clear Lake, and back with their documents. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Their facility is very inadequate for a big, clumsy guy like me. I had trouble negotiating through their staff areas, because they have files just stacked here and there and in the hallways, and it's a bit of a trail to get through. The judges, as well as the staff and their CEO, are interested, as the judges are in Santa Cruz and San Benito County, on a different allocation schedule, because they point out that although they're a small county, they have a very large meth problem and a very large gang problem. And one of their judges had just finished a two-and-a-half-month trial on a multi-defendant homicide case, which is pretty routine for a large county, but for a small county to tie up 25% of their departments at one time is significant. When they transport in-custody defendants, they put up a portable wall between the defendants and folks in what you would consider to be their lobby. I could look over the wall, so it wasn't terribly high. And when they do juvenile cases, they have to block off the bathrooms so that no one can use the bathrooms up on the fourth floor where the court is located, and put plywood over the windows so no one can see in. So they're very anxious to have their project go forward. They are on the list to go forward. And I think that's most of their concerns. I invited them to come to the meetings. I know that they listen remotely. I hope they're listening today. And I invited them to come and speak during the public comment section, because the council would like to hear from them personally. So that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Hardcastle and Judge Jackson. It's critical that we have these report backs from our counties to hear from Lake and Santa Cruz and San Benito. It's important. We used to do site visits, but though we're not there with you, your reports are focused and detailed, and we understand and better understand the challenges of our sister courts, and we are working toward a resolution that they should be hearing about in our meetings toward alleviating much of the concerns that they have. Their concerns are our concerns, and we share their pain in hearing this description of the courts and lack of service to the folks and what the employees need themselves. Thank you for delivering those messages. Yes.
Doug asked me if I wanted to make a report about INYO. I told him I'll make a full report at the next meeting. But just to very briefly tell everyone, I did stop by the INYO courthouses, both in Bishop and in Independence last Friday. They were so gracious because I had seen Tammy up here, and she's here now, and she had said, just stop by any time. And I did. I just dropped in, and they could not have been more welcoming, happier to see me, hardworking people in terrible conditions. The courtrooms are just awful. There's no ADA, of course. If they have an ADA issue, they have to use a remote building for it. But I will give a complete report, but I just want to thank Tammy for coming up here and representing her court. And I'll be happy to provide more detail next time.
Thank you. And I also want to say that we plan on telling the stories about each court in the legislature to the lawmakers, the people who make these decisions. We plan on painting the graphic picture that we know exists in each of these counties about the need for an adequate and sound judicial branch budget. We are at that point in our agenda where we are at public comment. Let me just say we have three speakers for public comment. All three, however, pertain to item G, trial courts, pilot project authorizing remote video proceedings in traffic infraction cases. So we will hear from all three when we reach item G. Also, and council has received this, I believe, already, we have one written comment from the Riverside County Bar Association. It's included in your material. It's also posted on the Judicial Council meetings page on the website. So having had no request to address the council consent agenda item generally affecting the administration of justice, we'll now take up our consent agenda. On your calendar, you can see its consent agenda items A through C. And as way of background, as you know, the Executive and Planning Committee places items on the consent agenda in consideration of council meeting time and to ensure that the work of the council and its advisory committees can be as effective as possible in setting policy and implementing solutions. Placement on the consent agenda itself in no way reflects on the significance of a proposal. And prior to the meeting, any council member may request that an item on consent be moved to the discussion agenda. We have three items relating to reports to the legislature on today's consent agenda. Do I hear a motion to move the agenda?
So moved.
Judge O'Malley and Justice Baxter. Second by Judge Jacobson. I don't know why I should ask for this, but it's a consent. It moves. We're on to our discussion agenda item now.